Maybe I have to have an independent person sitting between you guys. Maybe that's the way this would work.
You'd have to find one first.
Is there, I don't know, is there such a thing as comments yesterday, KB? I should get a combat medal for being here with you, right?
You're so brave. You're so brave. He'll take it unbelievable. Talking about today. Balls, just the size of your balls to come on this show.
Well, I didn't think you're going there with that one, but
it's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head to head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
And the answer should always be yes. Welcome to the Friday show. Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, and the two guys who everybody tunes in on Friday to hear.
Everybody
who knows anything about politics.
It is our highest podcast download of
it
the
is,
week.
Yes. And because they're really? Superstars.
It is.
On the left, Democrat Joseph Pecky. On the right, conservative
very
Republican.
Flowery today.
Very flowery.
Very Mar-a-Lago. Yeah,
you should watch on YouTube.
Today.
Yeah, very Mar-a-Lago.
We got a very fun, two golf shirts. Two golf shirts. One looks like a Hawaiian.
Joe McCashin on the other side, by the way.
This is a Whistling Straits shirt.
But yeah. It looks Hawaiian.
But it's flowery because spring has sprung.
Are you a big Hawaiian shirt guy?
No.
No.
No, that's really surprised me when I walked down the stairs.
And yeah. Bill's wearing a Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah. I am.
Your shirt made me do
a
spit
take. But you haven't been yet,
you
right?
You ain't a member.
I've never been there.
You've never been.
I've been near it. My son lived in an Airbnb about a mile away from there when he was on the campaign.
I peered at it from the outside. They wouldn't let
me
in.
We drove up. I went through one level of security, and there were several more, and I didn't do those.
All right, let's get started.
Let's get started. Texas. I just asked. Is this going to be the most interesting Senate race as midterms approach? And Bill, you said not for long. So, what is your take on where we are now?
So, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General, defeated incumbent John Cornyn on Tuesday night by 27 points. Wasn't close. Paxton has been elected Attorney General 3 times. He got the Trump endorsement. It was a blowout in all but 2 counties in Texas, and he is the favorite to win. According to the latest betting odds, Kalshi, for example, 60% chance that Paxton retains that seat, 40% chance for James Tallarico. And I will say this, Paxton may already have the best ad of the cycle, and there's still 154 days to go. He instantly defined Tallarico as not being uniquely Texas, and he used Tallarico's own words against him on a variety of different topics, called them Talafrico. Tallarico does not align with Texas, period. And if Democrats wanted to be serious about this, they would either nominate a real cowboy, a beta male, or someone like Ann Richards, a woman.
I think
who,
you mean wait. Alpha male?
An alpha male.
Yeah.
An alpha male. He's a beta male. He's the beta male.
Yeah.
Or someone like Ann Richards, a woman who has balls. And they did neither in this case.
Man, Bill comes out right out of the gate today. Like,
do you think Jasmine Crockett would have been a more formidable candidate against
Ken
Paxton?
She would have been more interesting nationally and would have been able to raise more money. This guy is so misaligned with
Texas. I mean,
he's
raised like $3 million in one day.
And I hope he raises $100 million because the money spent in Texas is money that Democrats won't spend in North Carolina or Maine or Michigan, so spend it all.
Do you often talk about people who are on a path to be ministers, men of the cloth this way? Or just, is this a
I'm
unique
not sure which cloth he's
Presbyterian.
Part of.
He's trying to become a Presbyterian minister.
Those are part of his freaky positions.
And
what's freaky?
Presbyterians are freaky now?
God's 6 gender. Well, there are 6 genders. God is non-binary. Good luck with that in Texas.
Okay.
Anywhere in the Bible Belt.
On the other side, and I'll get to Tallarico because I think he's handling these attacks the best possible way.
I think he's handling them the worst, and I'll come back.
His campaign is now selling "I'm a Tallarico" shirt. But here's who you guys brought to the dance: a attorney general who has been indicted on 3 felony counts, but got pretrial diversion. He was his own staff called the FBI on him. The Republican legislature impeached him. And his wife is divorcing him on biblical grounds. He denies those allegations that he's cheating on her. This is the most flawed, corrupt nominee for the United States Senate in America today. And at a time when we have the most corrupt presidential administration in American history. I'm not sure voters are going to agree. We should just send more corrupt Republicans to serve in the Senate. James Tallarico may not be a perfect ideal candidate, but you underestimate him at your own risk. So let's go to the numbers. In 2018, which was the last time there was a Trump midterm, and you know he was not super popular, but the economy was really good. Beto O'Rourke got within 3 points of Ted Cruz. It was the closest Democrats have gotten to winning a statewide race in Texas this century. 1998 is the last statewide win. In that race, Beto never led Cruz in a poll. That has already flipped. Tallarico is already ahead of Paxton in polling. We know that the economy is not as strong as it was in 2018. And Tallarico, there is something about the way he is resonating that is building that low-dollar contributions army. This thing is going to go down to the wire. If you think Republicans can get it on the cheap by bombing them out in the next four weeks, I think you're wrong.
Tallarico made a gigantic mistake late last week, or it must have been this week. It must have been on Wednesday, right after the primary. He went on CBS News and did an interview and essentially walked back all six of his super freaky positions, which is the biggest mistake you can make as a politician. If you said those things, you must have believed those things. You got to own those things.
What are the six? All right. Give me some of the six. Okay.
Open borders. He said our
border should be a welcome mat, that we should welcome immigrants.
Okay. And what does that mean?
That doesn't mean open borders.
What else on that list?
Six genders. God is non-binary. Okay. Yep. Give me a second. I'll think of the others.
Why do you think he's walking it back?
Because they're not popular positions in Texas. Okay, but in a general election, they may be popular in a Democratic primary, but not in a general.
But they're not popular anyway.
If you put a cowboy hat on, he's not going to be any different than he is now.
Right. He's a beta male. He is who he is, right? So
I feel like you're reading off of some kind of like memo, because I've never heard you use the word freaky before, and I've never heard you say beta male.
A lot of people are saying freaky.
I feel like you're like, these are the messaging points that we have to get across. Bill got the memo. Don't worry.
And the memo includes, let's just talk about this. How did you feel when Joe Biden's deputy chief of staff said that Herschel Walker was the first sentient dumbbell to ever run for the United States? Oh, wait, that didn't happen. But deputy chief of staff Stephen Miller yesterday spends the whole damn day, while he's earning a salary that we pay for, going out and saying James Tallarico is trans, which is false and stupid and is designed to further other trans people. How is that acceptable?
The only commentary coming out of the White House that's going to have an impact on this race is whatever Donald Trump says. And he has already commented on Tallarico as well. I think Miller should have stayed out of it. You and I are actually in the heat of agreement on that. There's no help for him to do that.
So you think Tallarico's got a good chance, Joe?
As good a chance as Beto O'Rourke or better.
And you say?
No chance.
No chance in Texas.
Zero.
Get out of Texas. That's what he says. All right, lots more to get to on this Friday edition. We're just getting warmed up. Chris and Steve, point taken, 620 WTMJ. Thin Lizzy, man, the great Phil Lynott, now deceased. Too many drugs in his life, but he was a hell of a singer. This is a great song, and that means the guys, the boys, are back in studio.
Maybe Ken Paxton and the Republicans will remix it and say the Low T Boys are back in town, because that's how they think they can win a Senate race.
You know
race.
Who's a Thin Lizzy fan?
Who's that?
Former Speaker Paul Ryan.
I knew that.
You did know that?
A long time ago, I talked about that.
Don't lose testosterone as you get older anyway, so aren't technically both of you low T?
All right, let's go. Well, he's much older than I am.
No, I'm at these two. I'm at the gray-haired ones.
Oh, so Joe gets off the hook.
He's 40-something.
I'm young and hearty.
All right, let's get it. All right, so we talked about Texas.
Yeah.
For the Senate in general, coming up, what does this mean?
The reason Bill doesn't want to acknowledge that Texas is the most interesting race in the country is because if it is, that means that Maine, North Carolina, Michigan, and Georgia have already broken Democrats' way, right? There is a national map here, and the reality of what Democrats need to win the Senate is they have to hold Michigan, hold Georgia. The two easiest flips are North Carolina and Maine. Then Democrats still need two out of the five, which are Texas, Ohio, Iowa, Alaska, and Florida. That's a really tough map for Democrats. But if Texas is suddenly like the race, it means that Democrats are doing well. And here's the reality. Democrats are doing well not because my party has suddenly figured everything out, but because Donald Trump is stuck in Iran and can't get out. Gas prices, even if they've come down a few cents in the last week, they're going to remain over $3 for a very long time.
Even if it ends.
Right.
Yeah.
Consumer confidence is at an all-time low. I mean, like, the political atmospherics here are really, really bad for the Republican Party right now. And I'm not sure how they get out of it, right? They're going to go back and, you know, be back in session in Congress this month. But what are they going to do? They have to try to put points on the board. What are those points going to look like? What's the win for the American people that suddenly changes how they feel about this administration and their economic standing?
So let's talk about the map first. And it's really important to talk about 2018, the last midterm with Donald Trump in the White House. Republicans lost 41 seats in the House, but won 2 seats in the Senate. So this isn't a straight line. The Republicans can easily maintain the United States Senate. They might lose North Carolina. I'll fully stipulate to that. But I think all the rest of the states are ultimately going to do what they have traditionally done. Ohio's going to go red. Iowa's going to go red. Alaska's going to go red. Texas is going to go red. The map quickly gets very complicated for Democrats to try and get that majority. I just don't see it happening. Maybe they end up at 52 rather than 53, but I can also see a scenario where they get to 55.
Republicans.
You know, Republicans. Yeah.
Interesting.
And, what about and honestly, the House could be within two votes either direction.
Yeah. So you don't see a
all of the swing. All of the predictor models, whether it's Cook Political Report or Inside Politics, they all have Republicans at a base level of 210 with about 18 swing seats. You know, so they need to win 8 to maintain the majority. But if they only won 5 of those, you know, they'd only be down by a few points. So you're not going to see what happened in 2018 with a 41 vote swing.
And you know that. We've talked about this. The 13 even year elections in the 21st century, 11 of them have been big change elections. Once these things start falling one way or the other, they all do. And so will Democrats win 40 seats in the House? Probably not because of the way Republicans have re-rigged their maps, but if you asked me, I'd say, well, 20, 25, because they're all going to tip one way because people are pissed off. This presidency is out of control. The Republican-controlled Congress isn't doing a damn thing to rein it in, and there's nothing to indicate that in the next 150 days they're going to change their behavior.
Bill, as far as your strategist position, your official position, what do Republicans need to have happen to make the scenario that Joe's depicting not happen?
The war's got to end and the gas has to come down closer to $3, neither of which they control.
Well, they could control it.
Potentially.
Without, I mean, you're not going to put your president.
You're not going to put your president in a weakened negotiating position by shortening his leash.
Would a weaker negotiating position for Donald Trump look like right now vis-a-vis Iran? Maybe that's what we'll talk about.
We should talk about that because part of the deal that's like being proposed right now is like a whole lot of money for Iran. $300 billion
Beat up Obama for doing? It's actually like eight times.
Preparing to give Iran $300 billion in an investment fund as part of the current deal that they're negotiating.
If we got back to the Iran of the '70s, it might be worth it.
All right, let's take a break. We'll spin that around the break. Iran and what's happening there, what's not happening. Chris and Steve, Bill and Joe, Friday, point taken. Thanks for being here.
All right, a couple more minutes before the bottom of the hour news with Bill McCashin and Joseph Peckham, of course, Steve and me, Kristen Bry. All right, we're close.
No, come on. This is like, update the parable.
She just lit the match on Joe.
It's not the boy who cried wolf. It's the old man who cried peace. We have a deal. No, we don't. These are Iran's red lines. They want the right to enrich uranium. They want to possess the enriched uranium they already have. They want authority over the Strait of Hormuz and the removal of sanctions. If those are their red lines, there's not going to be a deal for a very long time. And by the way, the thing they are saying is like 95% of the way there. 99% of the way to negotiate for longer. This is not the Treaty of Versailles. This is a MOU to negotiate for another 60 days over what to do about the uranium. This is nonsense. And it is the perfect encapsulation of this presidency, because he has no credibility. They have no plan. They have a Congress that won't do anything to stop them. This is insanity, and it has been since day one.
Well, and it also doesn't seem like Israel has any interest in stopping their war in Lebanon.
Well, listen, we don't have a lot of time in this segment. We'll pick it up on the other side, but I would say this. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm also very skeptical on whether or not this is going to get done anytime soon. That's just the reality.
And if it doesn't get done, bad news.
Bad news for Republicans. Bad news for Republicans.
Interesting times we live in. Bill McCashin, Republican strategist. Joseph Peck on the Democratic side. We got Kristen, Brian, Steve. Thanks for joining us on Friday. If you miss any or all of our conversation, which unfortunately some people do, it's always available on our podcast page at WTMJ.com. And you can also just Google Point Taken. It's your favorite podcast platform. Lots to say on a Friday. What else are we getting to today? We've got the MU Law School poll. Ooh. Oh, wait a second. People do care about that death tax relief bill that went down.
Maybe Steve and Bill were right.
Maybe we were right. I know exactly Steve, what you're going to say. I have a retort for what you're going to say. Just hold on to it.
Bring it on.
Hold on to it, Joe.
All right, welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, along with Steve Scafidi, and it's Friday, so Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki here to duke it out. What did your sister-in-law say? The teeth are out?
The dog's teeth are out.
The dog's teeth are out.
Yeah, love
but
that.
But we're all smiling.
Those dogs would love me.
Yes. All right, let's focus.
You are a dog guy.
Let's focus on Wisconsin. Let's do an MU poll first, because I know Steve wants
to tell us how right
Steve wants
about
to talk
everything.
About how right
I
was.
Love it.
Bill too.
And Bill was, and so... You talked about this with Charles Franklin on Tuesday.
I did.
We can school the kids.
There was an emergency poll. I don't know if they called it that, but they turned it around pretty quickly as far as Marquette Law School poll asking voters how they felt about how the deal went down 2 weeks ago now-ish. Yeah. And it's, you know, what was it?
Four out of five.
Yeah. 4 out of 5 say said the should deal have should have passed.
We'll hold them accountable, also said in that same polling. Bill, what do you think about that result?
It's not surprising. We talked about it.
Of course it's
the,
not surprising.
The week it went down, I predicted, and Jazz can put it up at some point in July, when the next Marquette statewide comes out, Tony Evers' numbers will be higher because of that deal. Voters in Wisconsin don't mind bipartisanship. They want progress, and in this particular case, they wanted their money back. It wasn't really difficult politics, except for 15 Senate Democrats and 3 Senate Republicans who decided it was difficult politics. And they have some
Tom Tiffany. He was like he said
there
yesterday.
There are 9
that he
candidates
all the money
for governor.
Back.
Only one had the right answer, and that was Missy Hughes.
Yeah,
that was it.
Which I gave her credit for.
Yeah,
I don't see that this was hard. It's not perfect. And I know the analysis of the money. There were things that could have been better, like not tying up the next 3 or 4 years of these expenses. This could have been a 1-year deal. That's what it should have been. But that being said, it's silly to assume that Wisconsinites didn't want this. Not just for the checks. A lot of influencers having fun with the check thing. And I watched all the videos. This is a move by the state of Wisconsin, a Democratic governor, Republican-led legislature, real leadership shown across those party lines to actually do something. And I will point to one thing specifically. You talk to school district leaders across the state, they were disappointed so much so they want to come back and say, do something for us, please, especially on special needs.
So if the people want it, it's always the right thing to do? Is that your position?
When 4 out of 5 people are struggling, that's what
the
numbers
suggest. Isn't
government
of the people, by the people, and for the people?
But you understand what I mean, right? Like 4 out of 5 people, 75% of people being for cannabis didn't persuade Robin Voss. 70.
And Robin Voss was wrong on that.
Right, but like sometimes people have bad ideas. And I'm not saying they do in this case. I'm just saying we elect folks to not just look at the 6 inches in front of their face. I think the best argument against it, and I don't know what I would have done. I'm kind of in Tom Tiffany's lane. Like, that sure as hell ain't the deal I would have negotiated if I was governor. But I'm not.
But it is right? The deal.
But it was the deal that was on the table. And I think we should have leaders who are looking around corners and over the horizon line. One of the ways that we have gotten to a debt and deficit crisis in this country is politicians want a sugar high. And so they spend, give it all away, and they are not worried about 2 years, 10 years, 25 years from now. And so, yeah, it's a totally defensible position that this should have happened. And it's not surprising at all that 80% of people, when everybody is struggling right now, are going, yeah, $300 or $600 would help a lot. I get both of those things, but to suggest that that means it's a slam dunk and they're all idiots and a-holes for not doing it.
I didn't call anybody that name. I didn't call them that name. I just think it's a bad decision.
Yeah.
I didn't name call them.
I don't know that it'll ultimately be an issue in the Gov's race because the person likely to get through the race probably isn't Missy Hughes. So nobody can use it against each other. But I think it will be a very big issue in the legislative races. And one of the questions that Franklin asked was, will this impact your vote? 29% said it would have a significant impact on their vote. Another
29?
28.
Okay.
The combined
was 73.
Yeah, it was big. Almost as big as what they said. Yeah. They were disappointed.
Would have an impact on their votes. So people are paying attention. And you know, particularly in the Wauwatosa race and in the Eau Claire Senate races, I think it's going to be the deciding issue.
So much of this that also bothers me, and I'm not a Democrat, but I do like Tony Evers because he's been very respectful to me and us over the years. He's always provided opportunities to talk with him. This is a Democratic governor who worked with the Republicans.
A popular Democratic
governor.
And
they threw it away like it was garbage. And I've heard some of the comments from some of the Democratic candidates, and it's so dismissive. And since I'm in that age group, it seems ageist to me. Old
Why
guy,
does it seem
old,
ageist?
Because I see the commentary from people that talk about it and say, He's a
they're
lame
ducks.
Lame
the
duck.
Three of the guys Let, who
move
negotiated
on,
are
Go
lame
away,
ducks.
Tony.
Ages, so
I think
as...
it's ages. That's my opinion.
He called them a lame duck, not an old
duck.
Or an old fart.
Or an odd duck.
Yeah.
Or a silly goose.
I would say this. The one who potentially, you know, Tom Tiffany, I think, should have said, we should do this, and when I'm governor, I'll do X, Y, and Z. I think that would have been a better answer. But the one who probably missed it the most is Francesca Hong. Had she said she was for this, I think that primary would be over. I really do.
Let me ask Joe a question.
Yeah.
So are you opposed, when you have surpluses, and we've had them for a while, of giving people their money back, or are you of the camp that says, let's take that money and reinvest in more programs?
Neither.
That's often said.
Neither, and I think the context really matters, because if I had any confidence that our economy would continue growing and that the next budget cycle would be an easier one, fine, give it all back. But when you look at what is happening with the economy across multiple sectors, this next budget is going to be an absolute beast. So they were going to hold back some of it to make that easier. Because what you don't want to do is give it all away now and then in the next budget cycle have to dramatically cut services or raise taxes.
Well, and this is the thing, right? The legislature's nonpartisan budget office found that this deal would have created a $2.9 billion deficit.
They also, this is directly quoting, made no assumptions about future revenue or spending growth. So they're saying there's a potential.
If everything stays the same.
It could be problematic. But we've had surpluses for a long time.
But my thing
in the state
is, it's not staying the same. The transportation.
I understand
right, like,
that.
So
predicting
it's
the future
worse
is
than
difficult.
That. Yeah, it is.
This money should have been given back.
Every
couple,
cent of it.
Yeah, a couple
every
sessions ago. And here we are still talking about it. Nothing done for the people, 4 to 5, saying, we're hurting, but please do something.
That's the balance in the deal. They withheld $700 million. Plus, our rainy day fund is the highest it's ever been in the history of the state.
Forget
over
about,
$2
billion,
right?
Yeah,
over
$2
billion. So we've got cash in the bank.
Missed opportunity for a lot of people. Lots more to come on the Friday edition. Joseph Pecky, Bill McCutcheon, Kristen, and Steve. Producer Jazz doing her great work as always. Quick break. It's Friday. That means Bill McCutcheon, Joseph Pecky. Strategists on both sides of the aisle. Yes, both sides. Chris and I read a lot of emails and texts where people say, when you having the conservative on? When you having this? What do you want from us? Maybe I have to have an independent person sitting between you guys. Maybe that's the way this would work.
You'd have to find one first.
True.
Is there such a thing as comments yesterday, KB? I should get a combat medal for being here with you, right?
You're so brave. You're so brave.
He'll take it
unbelievable.
On
talking about
today.
Balls, just the size of your balls to come on this show.
Wow, didn't think you're going there with that one. But all right, so what are we talking? Governor's race? Governor's race? More?
Governor's race. Actually, Bill, you had a whole thread this week of your outside perspective on the ranking of the Democratic primaries.
Oh, I missed this because I'm not on Twitter
anymore.
What was it?
I got to your conclusion. I've got Mandela in the lead. So there you go.
What was your rank?
So I had three tiers. The first tier was Mandela Barnes and Francesca Hong. I think either of them could win the primary. And what I did was I listed them at 75 days out, which was yesterday. I'll do the same thing at 50 days, at 25 days, and at 10 days. And for those of you who don't know my background, my mom and dad are rolling in their graves as I say. I ran the most successful gubernatorial campaign in Wisconsin history.
You did.
In 1994. And I was on the fifth most successful in 1990. So
I was 12.
I graded the candidates. In tier two, I only had Sarah Rodriguez. But it's a little spicy, actually, if you read it. I didn't give her credit for the ads that are being run on her behalf by independent expenditures. I think they either say too much or nothing at all. In other words, they're a waste of money. But she's probably in third place. And then I dropped David Crowley down into the third tier, but I had him at fourth. I had Missy Hughes moving up to fifth because she took a chance. If Missy Hughes actually put $1 million or whatever she has behind her support for the tax package in June, not in July, she could move up the ladder. She could make herself the candidate that voters want to be around. But I think all of these campaigns, and I'm pretty sure Joe agrees, have made the mistake of waiting too long. Mm-hmm. There's only 74 days to go. This will probably be decided by day 50. And it might be a backroom deal where the funders of the party, including national funders, say Barnes or Hong can't win. We're going to pick one of the others and make them the candidate. We'll see if that happens.
Well, that's what I've heard through backdoor channels, is that like a lot of donors just haven't picked yet. A lot of the typical donors are not like, this is my candidate. And so they're kind of waiting to be either told or to see who comes out of the primary. But that's why no one has like run ahead with a bunch of money.
But what happens is at the end of the day, donors included want to bet on winners.
Yeah.
So if nobody does anything for 30 more days, the donors will say, Barnes is in the lead. I'm going to give him money. That's how it works. So all of the other candidates who think, well, there's still time, either don't understand statewide elections or are blissfully ignorant.
But does that mean their campaign managers don't understand? Like,
yeah.
Who is advising them? Joe.
Not me. I don't have a horse in this race. I just want to say you're both right. I'm hearing the same thing. The only context I would add is the gubernatorial candidates are being hurt a little bit in terms of their fundraising by how big the playing field is and how much opportunity there is for Democrats. Because if you're Greta Neubauer or Dianne Hesselbein, for two examples,
yeah,
and you are trying to raise, saying we have a clear path to a majority and it doesn't matter who the governor is, if we don't have the legislature, it's a heck of a lot easier for people who write checks to be like, you know what, I'm going to write to the SSDC or the ADCC today and I'll, you know, be behind whoever the nominee is. So I do think that's part of why this has turned into a sleepier affair than it should have been. The history on this, to remind folks, again, it's like by this point in the calendar in 2022, Alex Lazary, candidate for Senate, had spent $12 million communicating with voters. Sarah Godlewski, now running for lieutenant governor, then she was running for Senate. She had spent between $3 and $4 million dollars by this point. None of these candidates for governor have spent anything close to that. And the dynamics of the race are pretty similar, which was Mandela's been in first place. If you believed me, because every time I've told you this,
well, we're going to find out
it first. So, yeah.
Do they actually have the money to spend? That's the question. They must not.
That's the only viable explanation at this point is for everybody but Mandela must not have the money. And if you're the Barnes campaign, you must just be going like, whatever money we have, we'll wait to spend it until we have to, because that makes it more likely we have money to take on Tom Tiffany in the fall.
Well, it's an unknown variable because they don't have to report under Wisconsin law until July 1.
Yeah.
July 15th. So, the book closes on June 30th. So anyone who's raised any money, that's 30 days from now.
I know.
Right?
No.
So the campaign is probably set at that point in time. We don't know who has any money. They're all relying, at least theoretically, on independent expenditures. Fran Hong so far has run the best campaign with the least resources.
I would agree.
Just on record, and you don't think any of these candidates on the Democratic side will step back?
They might.
We'll know Tuesday or Monday.
They all look like they've turned in signatures.
Yeah.
At this point, I think it's still possible that one or two of them step aside.
As soon as next week.
Well, we'll see if Bankston gets the signatures.
Okay.
Why'd you pick him?
We had a whole show without mentioning him, and now he's part of our DNA on the show. All right. We'll wrap up the first hour with Bill and Joe after this. I've got news coming up. Oh, that's already in our music. You hear that song that he's playing there?
Yeah, the big balls.
Yeah. That's part of the theme of the show.
So for people who are wondering, I'll set this up because this is what we're going to talk about in the next hour. So keep you teased through the top of the hour news. Someone on Twitter yesterday, Bill alerted me, gave kudos to Tom Tiffany for having the courage to come on with a far left partisan.
We're so scary.
Like Kristen Bry.
You're so scary.
I'm so scary.
She says in her sultry
voice.
I'm
so scary. And I don't really care about what people think of me and where they put me on the ideological spectrum. But I thought it was an interesting question as far as the attention economy, which we can agree with, we live in now. But the attention economy in a statewide race. And as a consultant, when you're a media consultant or whatever, where you direct your candidate to spend their time on media. Because that person's assumption was that it was like a courageous thing to come on this show, which I think is garbage. But it does bring up the question of like, do Democrats go on conservative shows? Do Republicans go on even further left than me shows or whatever? So I want to talk about that on the other side of the news.
Yeah. And for the record, Tom Tiffany wanted to be on the show.
And he said he wanted to come back.
Yes. Good. So forget the nonsense. But we're going to tee that up in a lengthier conversation after the news, which is next on 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All right, Bill, your Medal of Honor.
Here we go.
For being so
Purple
brave.
Heart. Purple Heart.
Every week, coming on,
yeah,
dealing with this far-left partisan who's so unfair and scary. All right, so no, actually, yesterday, and I thought we had an excellent interview with Tom Tiffany.
I did too, I listened.
I enjoyed getting to talk to him. I thought he handled some of our questions as well as he could, and as far as, like, it was a great conversation. We posted a clip from that, as we usually do from the show, and because we live in the clipping of content now, of just bits and pieces of longer content get shared and commented on, that clip was commented on Twitter, and someone, a right-leaning active Twitter user, said how much courage it took for Tom Tiffany to come on with a far-left partisan like me. And it got me thinking, one, as far as I think how we think of this show, which is everyone with all points of view are welcome here, and that we try to be very fair.
Yeah.
But also,
I think you've proven that.
And not making this about us, but in the, because he referenced consultants and what consultants say or do in their suggestions of where candidates spend their time in the media landscape. And so I just want to talk to you guys as strategists about, in this attention economy where media is so decentralized, there is no one way to really capture lots of eyeballs, especially in just a statewide race. And so what does that look like these days? And like, is the advice not go everywhere that will have you?
You want to go first, Bill, or should I?
It should be. Go everywhere they... I mean, if you are running for a statewide race, whether it's governor, lieutenant governor, or United States Senate, you should go over wherever they hear you, because at the end of the day, you're going to represent 5.5 million, 5.6 million people statewide. You don't represent just the Republicans or just the Democrats. Why wouldn't you? If you're comfortable with who you are and what you believe and you're prepared, you should absolutely do those things. I think it was a colossal mistake for Kamala Harris not to go on Joe Rogan's podcast in 2024. Would that have made the difference between winning and losing? I don't think so, but it would have shown that she's got the cojones, since that's our theme today, to go
that's
into
the
lion's
the
den and, you know, have a good conversation about policy and maybe even a few disagreements. That's okay.
Joe, I'll go before I...
Well, quickly on that, I learned in the last 10 days, the whole reason she went to Texas and did that Beyonce concert was they had an oral agreement with Rogan to do it in Texas that day. And then Trump and Rogan basically conspired against her to not have it happen. So she tried. My default setting on this is sort of the Pete Buttigieg model, which is go everywhere, be everywhere, do everything. And I will add to that, there's always other context than that.
Yeah.
There are some candidates who are really wicked smart, would be really good elected officials, who they're just not as, you know, good at, like, in front of a microphone or a camera as others are.
Yep.
So you got to take that into account. You do have to, unfortunately, take into account the other things you need to do. It takes time to go and raise money. And so, like, if you're a candidate for governor today and you've got an opportunity to do this show, or you've got somebody, you know, on one of the coasts, or if you're a Republican down in Texas, say, like, hey, come down to Dallas. We'll raise, you know, $150,000 for you. The choice for those candidates for governor today would probably be go get the $150,000, right?
100%.
So it's not quite as simple as, like, if anybody asks you to come do anything, you go do it.
So this is – so the – not Joe Rogan aside, yeah. But I sent you guys a clip from this morning from Armchair Expert, which is Dax Shepard, and very, very popular podcast. Yeah. I don't – he's annoying to me, but whatever. That's a side note. But they said with Kamala – that it wasn't necessarily her. It is consultants having a heavy hand in, well, these are the only questions you can ask, and being trying to direct, whether they're podcast hosts or radio hosts or journalists, like, what you can and cannot talk about, which feels like you're going to miss the opportunity actually get exposed to audiences if you're going to dictate what you can and cannot talk about.
It's an outdated model that can best be summarized as everyone in their – no matter who you are or what you do, we're all trying to mitigate risk every single day.
Bingo.
And people who are wired for politics and totally type A, that's a lot of the reasons they're good at this, or like in that space, they want to control everything because that's how they're wired. But you can't do that. And I'll cop to, like, when I was, you know, in the aughts, right at the turn of the century. And I was in my 20s, I didn't have that perspective. But what life has told me is, like, just got to let it rip, man.
The number one attractive attribute of a candidate on either side is authenticity, right? So consultants, and Joe and I have lived through this, maybe even been part of that class in a few campaigns, try and not only mitigate risk, but protect the candidate, sometimes from themselves, because you don't know what they're going to say or how they're going to say it. It's a mistake. Either the candidate can handle it or they can't handle it. And I thought Tom Tiffany handled it just fine
yesterday.
Totally.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why with that tweet specifically, I was like, it feels like you're telling on yourself that you're scared. Like, who's the snowflake now, right? Of like, you can't handle me?
Yeah, you the person that tweeted that is the problem. Not you, not Tom Tiffany.
Not Tom Tiffany. No, I know. But clearly I don't think he's alone in that sentiment.
No. Everybody's welcome on this show. I don't care what we had. Left, right. I want to hear what they have to say. And I'm not going to block them from saying something with stupid questions. I want them to, I'll ask a question, we'll ask questions. They get to say what they want to say. And then you can judge them out there in radio land, however you consume us. That's the goal of the show. As far as I know, that's we're always going to do it that way.
I totally agree.
Why would we do it in a different way? Because this is...
There are lots of people who do.
I know, but this is unique.
I would also just say agreeing on everything makes boring radio.
Absolutely.
Makes boring life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even in marriages. Disagree on stuff. Was that too introspective? Maybe, perhaps. All right, we'll take a break. Say something nice after the break.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now. Smile.
All right. Joe, you said you have two Say Something Nice this week. We'll see
one
if
of them's
have the
a
same
little catty,
one.
But,
are you breaking the rules already?
Maybe. Okay. Megyn Kelly.
Well, I did already.
Megyn Kelly this week talking about Donald Trump. I didn't expect the corruption to be quite as widespread as it has been. The self-dealing, the lining of his family's pockets, it's shocking. You look across the board at the Trump family, I've never seen a family get so rich off the presidency. I don't agree with Megyn Kelly on much, but I agree with her on that.
Mm.
Thank you, Megyn. And if there's time, if there's time, we'll come back to the other one.
So mine is Representative Jake Auchincloss.
Auchincloss, yep.
A Marine, so he's a veteran, Jew. This week came out against Graham Plattner, the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate in Maine, said that the statements that he's made in the past, the fact that he had a Nazi tattoo on him, were, quote, disqualifying. And he had to walk that back a little bit within 24 hours because the hard left came at him with everything they got. First of all, I give the guy credit. I totally agree with him. I think we've run some dog candidates on both sides in the last few cycles. Plattner would be one of them, in my opinion. But the fact that he had to semi-walk that back and say, well, he wasn't endorsing Susan Collins. He's just saying he would vote for somebody else or write them in the primary. I think that was a sort of a chicken way out of it at the end. He had the right answer first, and he should have stuck with that. So I'm going to give him credit for the first
answer. What do you think of Plattner's skull and crossbones argument that all the military guys did it as it doesn't have that representation that you're accusing me of?
He didn't know what it was. He has told
the story. That's what he said, yes.
Hold on, and I've seen the video. At his brother's wedding, his brother married a Jewish woman.
He took his shirt off.
Right, like, yeah. And nobody objected to it, so clearly the Jews in the room didn't know it was also, right? So it's nonsense.
Okay.
It's not, the guy is not a secret Nazi. Let's dispense with that.
All right. Well, good for you to hear you say that. Okay. You want to go?
Sure. There is a bipartisan group of women senators headed to, are to reassure our U.S. allies that we are still behind them, led by Lisa Murkowski. And so it is, who's the whole group that's going over there? But they're heading over to Greenland and some of our Scandinavian allies. Mm. But I think it's like Katie Britt, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Lisa Murkowski, and Cynthia Loomis. And then there's some Democrats who are going as well. But ladies are getting it done to reassure all of our allies that we're still here.
I would put any of them in the White House tomorrow over the current occupant.
Yeah. All right. Mine is for Deb Andraca, state rep, who I love Deb. She's very gracious with her time. We disagree on things, but that's, again, what we were talking about before. To be able to have those civil conversations is cool. I spoke to the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin on Wednesday. It was in Oak Creek, so it was like, welcome home, Steve. And the mayor, with the current mayor, Dan Bukavich, was there.
You were the sought-after MC.
Oh, yeah.
I was. And I had fun with it. And they let me rip. And Debbie, who was running the thing, just said, just do your thing. And I did. But what I liked is Deb listens. Yeah. And she doesn't have to agree with me, but she listens. And she sat there, and we're talking about transportation. And basically, I have this message that I do a lot, especially when either I'm paid to speak or I just show up and they let me, they give me a microphone.
Takes the microphone.
I say the same three words usually at the beginning and the end. Get a four-letter word, begins with S and ends with T, done. All this talking is great, civil debate, awesome, but at the end of the day, getting that done means the public can move forward on things, and that's my biggest frustration
literally
with politics. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Good job, Bill. So that was my thing. And Deb is like a number of Democrats that I know. They're willing to listen. Republicans should also be willing to listen. So she gets my say something nice this week.
Nice.
All right. Let's go to break, and then we got grab bag. Where are we going on this today? Joe's thinking of one, I think. Or do you have one? You know, we don't know. After this.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, Bill McCaution, what is your grab bag for this
week? My grab bag is a shout-out to Steve. He said it earlier. He spoke at Oak Creek at the Transportation Development Association roundtable discussion, which had 93 people show up for a breakfast meeting on both parties.
Good breakfast. I didn't have any, but it looked amazing.
And that was the fifth one. I think they have 8 total. They'll have more than 1,000 people that have shown up at these across the state because they understand that transportation is an important issue, not just in and of itself, but how it relates to economic development and growth in the state of Wisconsin. So kudos to Steve, the old mayor. They got him out of retirement, and
yeah,
he had the old crowd rolling, I'm told.
Yeah, it was fun. It was awesome. Yes, Joe.
I want to give a little love to Zoran Mamdani, who so far has proven to be more fiscally responsible as mayor than, I don't know, the president of the United States has been or the Republican Congress has been, in addition to balancing the budget and keeping funding for things like police and EMS and fire services where it needed to be, as opposed to defunding, which is what my Republican friends would have you believe these crazy socialists will do. In addition to that, and this is new and it's interesting, and it's to Steve's point about, like, you can talk all you want. It's about what you actually do. GSD. Get it done.
Yeah.
Did you see what Mamdani's doing?
I don't.
He is seeing the failed Doge and raising you COGE, a commission of government efficiency, to streamline, cut red tape, and cut costs in New York City government. And that's a great idea, and I hope it works better than Doge did.
I was losing as many businesses as him, I'd be doing the same thing.
Hey,
whatever happened to GOAT? Wisconsin's version of
Ned Wesky. Amanda Nedwesky's done a phenomenal job on that.
Really?
Google
so it actually is a thing?
Oh, have they, it's have a they, huge have they, thing.
found
she, yeah, she
fraud?
Came up, yeah, well, and she came up with big bills like the anti-grooming bill out of that committee. And Amanda Nedweski has done a
phenomenal job. But that doesn't have anything to do with actual spending and the budget.
It had to do with 200 plus teachers being on a list.
I know what it was. It had to do with
creepers.
But the GOAT committee was about. It was a playoff of Doge.
They've done a variety of things. It's actually very active. Nedweski's probably had the best session other than Barb Dietrich of anyone in the Republican Assembly. Look it up.
Okay.
I read this list about the America's best 50 restaurants. Not one Wisconsin restaurant. It just irritated me. That's my whole thing. Now the number one is it Smythe in Chicago? Smith? Number one restaurant in America.
Never been there.
Never heard of it.
Never even heard of it. Yeah.
I just was pissed off because we have such great restaurants in Wisconsin.
Favorite Milwaukee restaurant? Go.
Carnivore.
Oh.
It depends what food choice.
La Miranda.
Interesting. You can't snooze on the Capitol Grill right across the street.
It's good.
Also very good.
We have a lot of really good restaurants. We do. Harvey House in Madison is one of the best restaurants I've ever been to.
Very good.
We should have had at least one on that list. Chicago's got a bunch of them. Come on, losers.
So that's your complaint?
They are losers. They're about balls, to lose the Bears.
Yeah.
I'll do a personal one. First, come out to Locust Street Festival on Sunday. There may or may not be a quintessential Wisconsin icon. At my husband's hosting a stage.
Kristen will be there?
I don't know.
Wisconsin icon?
This is something that you want to take a picture with. You may want to tour. It's going to be pretty, pretty cool. So head over to River West and the Locust Street Festival on Sunday. And this is me as my extroverted self. Had a very proud mom moment this morning. This is from Micah, who dropped Frankie off at school. So their unit right now is community helpers. So learning about doctors and firefighters, and they learned about the post office. And so they wrote each other, their friends in class, letters. And Frankie got the most letters.
Wow.
And so I got a text from my husband saying a little humble brag as far as our very popular kid who says hi to everyone and knows everyone's name. And she has two very extroverted parents, so no one is surprised there.
I just love the fact that you have your daughter and you guys have your kids. And I have grandkids now, and you have grandkids, too.
One granddaughter.
Yeah, it's sort of a, for me, it's reaffirmed, because I'm not generally a big fan of kids, but it's reaffirmed, it's reaffirmed my love of that. Because when I see their faces light up, it changes everything. It takes Grouchy Steve and makes him fun Steve, which I appreciate. So I spent some time yesterday with my grandkids. Loved it. Loved everything about it. So maybe that's my positive.
I'm a big fan of kids.
Generally, maybe.
Clip that, Jazz.
Not a big fan of other people's kids. Let's put it that way.
See you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're gone.
We're
next
gone
week.
Next
sorry, listeners. Yeah. Don't tune in and be disappointed.
It's going to be a hodgepodge over the next.
Yeah, it's summertime, man. So
it is. Enjoy your vacations. All right, we got a half hour left. We're going to have Week in Review put together by our producer, Jazz. All the news and voices and stories that you've heard all week on WTMJ. We got something after the break, but I don't even know what it is. We'll tee
we'll
up something.
Out.
We only have a few minutes left, but we'll get to it. I want all of you to pay attention during the news break. We'll see you, Bill and Joe, all week. They're, as much as we get to see them every week, they're two of the best guys in the business talking about politics, and that's why we love that they're here. Welcome back to 620 WTMJ, final half hour of the week. I'm Point Taken. She's Kristen Bryan. I'm Steve Scavino. Thanks for joining us. Great 90 with Bill and Joe.
It was really fun today.
I know we're biased, but other people, because I just did an event and you do a ton of it, they tell us they enjoy the Friday show often more than the rest of the week, which I'm fine with, because those guys are really smart, they're very experienced, and their takes are often, more often than not, spot on. They know what they're talking about.
But I also think there is something special in the relationship that we all have with each other.
True.
I think it's the same thing with you and I, right?
Yeah.
As far as it's one thing to have differing opinions, another thing to have like the banter and friendship that we have that I think is part of what people tune in for.
Yeah, and I know there's a big...
Because it's not just straight fighting.
No. There's a big market for hate radio. I'm just not in that group. I won't turn it on because it's stupid.
Are you a lover, not a fighter?
I am a lover, not a fighter. Sensitive lover, if you want to know.
All right, so... We were trying to figure out, like, what's a non-political story? I don't know. Would you consider this a non-political story?
Yeah, for the most part.
So, Jeff Bezos is that how you say?
Bezos.
The possessive of Bezos. Blue Origin blew up last night.
Yeah.
A rocket blew
Pretty dramatic. I watched the video.
There was no one hurt. Yeah. No one was on it. The footage is incredible as
Mega
far as
explosion.
Like how the big fireball that it created. And then, of course, I think largely because no one got hurt, a lot of sentiment, as it usually does when it involves billionaires, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk and their race for space, of like, this is what you're spending your money on. And it's interesting to me in the aftermath of Artemis and like how much that captured, including me, right? Like I got choked up and there's like so much goodwill about NASA and the return to space, I think, in public sentiment. But when it comes to billionaires doing it, I think the public sentiment is largely rolling its eyes.
Yeah.
And is it just because we're like, why do we trust NASA? Largely. Not a lot. Yeah. There's trust me, I also heard from the contingent of people who think it was fake. But largely, we trust NASA, and we just don't trust these guys.
Yeah. I don't trust them either. Whether it's Bezos or Musk, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, which is not very far. I am a strong supporter of NASA. Always have been. I love the space thing. I listen to podcasts about space. I've had guests on my podcast to talk about space. Planetarium director in Milwaukee, who's fantastic. It is a subject that fascinates me, and we should all be fascinated because at some point, that's going to be our future, hopefully. But I have no confidence that private sector guys are going to get us to Mars or a moon base, which I think is important. Let's start with moon first, then worry about Mars, because Musk is out of his mind. He said something the other day, I don't know what the context of the meeting was, that at some point in the future we'll have a million people living on Mars. Get real. Mars is a destructive environment. That is millennia
away.
Well,
also, it doesn't even like take like 6 months to even get there.
Yes! It's not realistic. And yeah, we have to have dreamers and people who think differently than the rest of us, and he certainly does that. I'm not cheering for rocket ships to explode, but maybe take a pause and just handing over all of that technology and everything to the guys, some cases invented that technology, and just say, we're good with you.
Or maybe
I still want NASA to do it.
Spend your money on things that make Earth better.
Yeah,
instead of thinking that we need to go inhabit a new planet.
It's like that dude. It's like one dude. I wish I don't have the time to look it up. He developed this equipment that went into the ocean and started cleaning up plastic in this.
Yeah.
He just did it. I love that stuff.
Like, that's the thing to me that's crazy about this, as far as you hear these stories sometimes of some of these billionaires who are creating bunkers and, you know, contingency plans if things go to hell. And Peter Thiel just moved to Argentina.
Yeah.
And largely it's from New York Times reporting that, like, because he's looking at the way the country's going right now and doesn't like it. And, like, Peter Thiel's a large contributor to why we are where we are. And so it's like
he's
this world.
Brain.
This world that the most powerful, richest people have helped create, and then they see the writing on the wall, and instead of doing anything to try to fix it, they're like, well, this is how I'm going to save myself.
I just, this notion that a lot of people have, including some of my friends, that if you're a billionaire, you have the answers to everything. I don't think so. You got a lot of money that gives you a lot of benefits, but you don't necessarily have any wiser opinions about anything than anybody else does. That's my take on a rocket ship exploding.
Bet they'll fix it and they'll do it again.
They got money to spend. They got billions of dollars. These guys are too rich. As I said sometime last week, first trillionaire will be Elon Musk. I'm not happy about that at all. I'll continue to talk about that. All right, after the break, a week in review, sponsored by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
All right, a Memorial Day salute, Packers running back arrested, stolen yard signs, and more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
And the Eastman Trader American Legion got more established that he first started putting the flags up in 1926.
These are veterans from every war, beginning with the War of 1812.
There are actually graves from American Revolutionary soldiers.
Swing and a miss, and Jacob Mizorowski punctuates a gem on Memorial Day.
Happy
Tuesday.
Voters look at it a little bit differently than the legislature.
Almost no difference
between Republicans, independents, or Democrats on whether the bill should have been passed is really quite remarkable.
So everybody has a stance and is weighing in on AI, including the Vatican.
Pope Leo, not an AI doomer. He does have a lot of concerns about this industry, and he's voicing them in this piece.
Marty Brooks and the Wisconsin Center District Board. Today, a closed board meeting to discuss potential litigation. As of right now, business as usual. Still president and CEO, a role he is contractually able to hold until early 2028.
Packers star running back Josh Jacobs appears to still be in the Brown County Jail. Two of those recommended charges are felonies.
Just from the team aspect of it, there's a you let everybody down because now everyone is going to have to answer for you.
I was summoned for jury duty.
Summoned.
I was summoned and I was so bored. I felt so much relief that I didn't have to come back because, like, I have stuff to do. I have this show to do.
Swing and a miss! He struck him out! It is a St. Louis sweep for the Crew!
Flo Mercure is a girl, and I was excited because I only have girls at home, so I know how to be a girl dad.
Be fierce, be brave, be healthy.
It's staring at you.
Pull tab, Matt. What a great name for an artist from Wisconsin.
As an artist, I know how expensive cost of goods can be, so I try to find one that I didn't have to pay for. So I take people's losers.
Hank Azaria, aside from being a singer of The Boss, he's also an actor and a voice actor.
Hey, is there a Butts here? Seymour Butts.
Why Bruce Springsteen?
He's really the only rock star that I can imitate. That's the main thing.
Congressman Tom Tiffany.
Clerks would affirmatively have to make sure that a person is a citizen.
I would have to do more than another person, potentially, if I had changed my name in order to vote.
But women do that now when they change their names for other purposes.
They did a little cut to the Mississippi State dugout, and sure enough, they had 6 crowns of broccoli just sort of hanging from their fence.
In depth this entire hour, pain at the pump.
We try and minimize the amount of mileage we're driving lately.
10 out of 10 would not recommend.
Business as usual.
A person is dead in Milwaukee after being pinned underneath a boat at a storage facility.
Patient has been pulled out from underneath the boat. We are going to be starting CPR.
An independent candidate for governor is spotted stealing political yard signs. He filmed himself doing it.
I'll have that. Whether people agree with my methods or not, at least now we're having a conversation.
Trump administration moves to put President Trump on a new $250 bill.
What's $250?
A lot of pull tabs? Strip club? Silk?
I don't go to strip club.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
John, you're extremely cynical. You know that?
Pandemonium!
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
I like that our strip club conversation made it into the Week in the Review.
It continues.
Yeah. All right, that's Week in Review brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text WEEK, W-E-E-K, to the Siding Unlimited talk and text line at 855-616-1620 to hear it again. Steve and I will be back after this to finish out the week.
All right, our week is almost over.
Short week.
Yeah.
I had a really short week.
Yeah, you did. You had jury duty.
Jury duty now feels like a while ago.
What was your, I know you did a post about it. What was the response from, like, the general public and your followers on your...
It was mostly just interesting to hear other people's stories.
About jury duty.
About jury duty.
Yeah.
Either, you know, 42 years, I've never been called.
How is that possible,
or every time I get called, I never actually get picked. Or people who served on different cases and they were like the one dissent on the case and it became a hung jury. So it was really interesting to hear people's own experience in doing this. And then I had actually my friend at the MMAC, they have some, I think it's Common Ground. They're getting a presentation from that group on innovative ways to approach jury duty, like things that we could do to make it more efficient and stuff like that. So it was really interesting to see people's reaction, not to like a controversial issue, but more of like their experience with, because that's like, for a lot of us, that is our only experience with the judicial system.
A lot of time they only go to the courthouse or that building.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking about that as far as I was there. It's like, you know, like the last time I was in the courthouse, the county courthouse, was getting a marriage license.
Yeah. Do you look forward to actually participating in the case at some point?
Yeah. I think it would be fascinating. And that's what, that was like kind of the tension of, I have a lot to do. And so it's hard to feel like fully invested in wanting to do it when you're like, this is a time suck. But as far as like the fascination of what it would be like to sit on a jury and actually see what a case does,
you watch the dynamics between the jurors. You can you always like pigeonhole people on how they kind of how they look and how they often you're completely wrong, and you see how people speak and approach a topic. And ours was a medical malpractice case like 20 years ago, but I learned so much about.
Did you ever watch the jury duty show that blew up a couple years back?
No.
When it was like all fake, except they had the one guy.
One was real.
One person was real and really thought he was on jury duty, and everyone else was actors, including James Marsden, who was playing himself. And it was a fascinating show. It was so entertaining.
Where is that available?
I think it's Amazon Prime.
I have to check it
out. It's excellent. It's very good, and it's an unbelievable like kind of like view into someone and how they navigate the world. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah, and it's always a hot topic. I'm already getting texts about people's experience. So people are curious about it. The one thing about the 40 years, how is that possible? You never would have been like part of anything in all that time.
I had multiple people say that they've never been called.
So it is purely random then, right?
It's purely, because there's some people, I talked to one of the guys I walked with to when we made that trek from the juror management room to the courthouse or to the safety building. He's like, every 4 years, he gets picked. This is like, it was like his fourth time. And then compare that to someone who's never been picked.
Yeah, Jazz?
I was going to say, when I lived in Champaign, Illinois, I didn't get called at all. But like within like a year of living in Milwaukee, I got called up, but only as reserve. And then said, oh, your last name is an S, so you don't have to go anywhere. So
yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, the process is fascinating. And you spent a long day at the courthouse. So
I did spend a long day.
It is a long day. And they've improved the food since I was there. I mean, I've been there for other stuff. But anyway, if you have not subscribed to our newsletter yet, please do. We'll finish it today and get that all put together. It is a great connection to the show, also to the station. We'll often share contact from some of the other stuff. We do some of the events that we are working on. Mm-hmm. Kristen has a big event coming up June
11th.
Yes. I have to get you those prizes, by the way. I forgot about that. So
yes, if you have any things you want to donate to the silent auction.
Yeah.
KBREY at goodkarmabrands.com. I would love to take your donations.
Yeah, so check out the newsletter. It's simple. You just text EXTRA, EXTRA, to 855-616-1620. It's also on the bottom of our homepage on WTMJ.com. Just sign up. We don't bombard you. It's once a week. We had a special Memorial Day edition this week. It usually comes out Sundays in the morning. Sort of a recap, look ahead. We have a great week of shows coming up next week.
Yeah, we have a ton of guests next week. So we have, if you've not missed it, I think I'm going to put this as my recommendation for the newsletter this week. But Caitlin Luby and Tamia Folks from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel spent 2 years investigating the Fox River PCB cleanup. And they have some unbelievable reporting on that came out this week. And so they're going to be on to talk about their reporting on Tuesday. Then we have our Sean Berger.
Yeah.
Burger.
He is our fifth salute to service. He couldn't be here because of a family emergency. He will be here Tuesday along with police dog Apollo.
I know. I'm very excited about
that's,
that.
That's our first pet that we've had in studio.
And I don't know are you allowed to pet the working dogs?
He'll tell you.
Okay. He'll let me know.
Yeah.
And then we have, showing my age, Melinda Myers.
Yes.
And I was like, who is that?
He goes,
oh my God, how do you not
experts.
Know who that is?
Yeah. So it's a fun event, the Enjoy Life Symposium from Capri Communities. We're going to just hang out. I'm a fanboy of Melinda's
are
for a
you?
Long time. I think we're the same age, but she's brilliant on all things plants. So we're going to
Are you going to like come up with a bunch of your pictures of your yard and ask
I'm
for
share,
advice?
I'm going to share. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So should I take all the pictures of my yard and be like,
yeah,
give her
you
input?
Should show your landscaping, by the okay. way. This gal to my right, Radio Right, has been, if you don't win a neighborhood award for your landscaping, something's wrong. It looks brilliant. And it's innovative.
Thank you.
Where did you get these ideas?
Pinterest.
A shout out to Pinterest. All right. News is next. Then the midday folks. That's Greg and Jessica. And lots more after that. Thanks for listening, everybody.